The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
One of the things that we do in meditation is to watch. And we're often told what to watch, you know, watch the breath or the body sensations or various emotions or thoughts that we have going on. We're told that it's better to watch anger, for example, than to act on it, or to watch fear or desire or envy. So there's a lot of watching, it can feel like. And sometimes people get a little bit bored with this. You know, they feel like they've seen all of this already, or that, you know, getting involved in it or watching it is somehow not interesting. I'd rather be doing it. I'd rather be thinking about it than just watching it as a thought. Or there can be thoughts creeping in like, why am I doing this exactly? Is each breath really so different from the other ones? Is the point that I'm supposed to become a breath expert where I could know very fine distinctions between breaths? So I'm here to advocate today that there's actually a lot of value in looking closely, you know, and really staying with this watching that we're doing. And it might be that there are ways that we don't immediately consider the value of looking closely that are maybe the deepest reasons why it's important. I read an article recently by the biologist David Haskell, who spent a year observing 1 square meter of forest near where he lived. And this is some of what he wrote. I gave my attention to the life of this small circle of leaves. The patch of forest became my window into the natural world. During that year, I saw a parade of salamanders, beetles, worms, fungi, flowers, songbirds, ants, caterpillars, shrews, and leaves. The activity present in a tiny patch of forest was astonishing. Sitting in the forest for hundreds of hours opened my senses. I connected to the variegated physicality of the world in ways that enriched my experience and helped me better understand the workings of the forest. Wonder comes when we give our attention to the world, starting with our own home, honoring it with our attention. So he's talking about a patch of forest. We could do the same thing, maybe in our backyard, we'd learn a lot. But also, what if we did it inside? Like, what if we observed, maybe not a square meter, what about like 1 cubic inch of our body for a year? I bet we'd learn a lot. What kind of parade would we see if we zeroed in on 1 little patch of our back? Or our belly, 1 little part. I've actually done this to some degree in meditation. I don't have an exact size and an exact time scale, but much of my practice in the first years was really getting to know my body from the inside, almost at a cellular level. You know, the mind can really see quite deep into the body. And it's almost as if, as the attention gets very fine, it's like you go through almost like an hourglass and a whole new universe can open up from one small patch of the body. Not so much because we zero our attention in like a laser and we try to burn through it. It's actually much more soft than that. But it's possible to look down into the body just more and more finely until it starts to open. We can also do this in the space of the mind. And it's not like the mind has any physical dimension, but there can be a sense of metaphorically looking at a small patch of our mind. Suppose in some sense when we look at the body that deeply, we're looking into the mind. It's not so different. But it's so interesting to just look at one spot. There's a lot of value in looking closely. And that's kind of one side of it, is to be willing to look more closely than we have before in order to see something different, like the biologist did in that forest. But it matters also that he did that for a whole year. So the other side is to look for a long time at whatever we're looking at. So we're not rushing to see certain things. We're not trying to achieve certain insights in a short amount of time, get certain results. But just being willing to look for a long time and let the experience flow in and kind of self-organize. You know, if we look for a long time, things sort of coalesce out of what we're looking at. There was a time in my life where I happened to be doing a lot of work from home, and it wasn't during the pandemic, it was earlier. And I would often go out for a walk in the afternoon just to take a break. And I walked, it just happened that I walked the same route in my neighborhood, pretty much the same route, nearly every day for about 2 years. And you know, that was just how it worked out. And one day, I thought I knew pretty much everything about that route. But one day when I was walking it, I suddenly became aware of all the microclimates along that route. So microclimates are like areas, maybe 100 feet or so scale, where the temperature changes. So it's like I could feel that it was 2 degrees warmer, you know, along one stretch. And then another area that just happened to get more breeze, it would cool down. And suddenly I was intensely aware of these tiny little changes in temperature along this 45-minute route that I was walking. And I'm sure that they were there before, but I didn't quite feel them as a pattern, you know, as a phenomenon that was repeatable every day. And once I had felt them, I couldn't unfeel them. You know, it was like every day I would feel those microclimates as I walked along. Those had come into my awareness. It's the same thing in the mind. You know, we look at the same thing every day, the breath or the thoughts. Not following the thoughts, but the fact that I'm thinking, same thing, same thing. And then one day, we see something, something different. We notice something, and it wasn't that it wasn't there before, it was. But we just had to slowly, we weren't looking for it specifically. I wasn't walking that route thinking, I wonder if I can discern the different temperatures. And it took me 2 years to discern them. I had no clue. It just suddenly appeared. So in the same way, this can happen in the mind. I don't think it's especially liberating to feel microclimates, but the teachings that we practice here do point toward insights that would have liberating potential for the mind. This is from Ajahn Chah, from his book, A Still Forest Pool. try to be mindful and let things take their natural course. Then your mind will become quieter and quieter in any surroundings. It will become still like a clear forest pool. Then all kinds of wonderful and rare animals will come to drink at the pool. You will see clearly the nature of all things in the world. You will see many wonderful and strange things come and go, but you will be still. Problems will arise, and you will see through them immediately. This is the happiness of the Buddha. So if we make our mind constant, like a constant route that we walk, we have a stillness that's constant in the mind. See what will come and drink at the pool. So many interesting sensations, thoughts, moods. We don't disturb any of them, just like we wouldn't yell and scream and scare the animals away from the pool where they've come to drink. So we look at them, see them come, learn about them. We're not really just looking like a camera. We're looking with wisdom. You know, mindfulness includes some intelligence about how we look at things. So we see through problems that come. We're not fooled by tricksters that come. We're not drawn into angry beings that come. You know, we just see them there, all at the pool. And when we look at specific things for a long time and closely, what emerges are what are called the universal qualities of experience. You know, we have our specific experiences, but they're all partaking of universal patterns. So, for example, it's common that people start to notice what are called the three characteristics. You know, we see things, the things are impermanent. Everything that comes will eventually also go. So it doesn't matter so much what it is, the thoughts, the moods, the sensations, what do they all share? They all share that they're inconstant or impermanent. They come and then they go. That's the quality that's common to all of them. And we start to see that when we look for long enough. We see that a lot of arising and passing is stressful, carries some amount of charge to it in a sense. We see that things are unreliable because they're coming and going. No single thing is going to be universally satisfying to us. It can't, because it's changing. We see that things are not so permanent. It's not so personal. We can't find an enduring self in anything that comes and goes. You don't have to think too much about these universal qualities. I just point to them so that when they emerge, you'll recognize them. When we've seen for long enough. So these patterns, these universal patterns, are important because understanding them liberates the mind from various distortions that it tends to have. It turns out that with all this watching, we're not aiming to see anything in particular, but we're aiming to see clearly, with no distortion, whatever is there. That's what all that looking does. It purifies how we look. This is an image given in one of the suttas. Just as if there were a lake in a mountain recess, clear, limpid, and undisturbed, so that a person with good eyesight standing on the bank could see shells, gravel, and pebbles, and also shoals of fish swimming about and resting. So too, a meditator understands this is suffering, this is the arising of suffering, this is the cessation of suffering, and this is the path of practice leading to the cessation of suffering. we see right there in our own experience these simple truths. You don't need to see anything other than what's already happening in your mind and body. It's enough. It's going to be enough. If we look closely, and if we look for a long time. So I guess that's the mantra, look closely and long. It will serve you very well.